Welcome to another episode of The Working Title, hosted by PJ Harries.
Okay, guys, so welcome to the podcast. We have got our first lady on the podcast. So we're, by the time this one comes out, we're like over 20 odd episodes out. And I'm ashamed to say this is the first lady we've had on, not out of any reason, just because I don't really know that many. So this is the first one that I've wanted to speak to that has an interesting story. So we have Kelly Bateman on at the moment. She is a former army medic and a trainee paramedic at the moment, going through uni and her placements. And we met back in Air Cadets when we grew up in Southend, which, if you've listened to some of the previous podcasts, especially recently, you notice that I've got some of the other guys on that we met all the way back then. So that is sort of our connection. So, Kel, are you still there?
I am still here.
Wonderful. So I gave you a little very brief sort of update of who you are, but why don't you tell us sort of how old you are, where you are at the moment, and what you're doing.
Okay, so I'm originally from Essex. I grew up there. I left there when I was 20 years old to join the British Army as a medic. Went through my training at Purbright, my phase two at Lichfield, ended up at 3-3 Field Hospital, and then back at Purbright, where I was a medic in the medical centre. I recently left the army in September, and I'm now a student paramedic at Bournemouth Uni, and I'm working with South Western Ambulance Service.
Ah, lovely. And you're a reservist as well?
I am a reservist in this area as well, yep, with an infantry unit.
So what do you do so what is your sort of role in the infantry unit? Do you have a title? Are you just private? What's the crack with that?
Private.
Well, I don't know how it works, do I? Oh, big time.
No, I'm the medic. I think there's two of us there now. There's myself. There's another medic who's also a university student. He's a mental health nurse student. And between us, we're kind of still settling in. Obviously, I've only been there about 6 months. But yeah, just looking to train up the guys to sort of team medic level, doing some basic training. They're teaching me a lot as well. I've never been attached to infantry. So yeah, just doing the old training exercises, so casualty evac drills and stuff like that.
Before we get into like the sort of the flow of what we want to talk about, I just thought of something. When you changed from regular army to the reservist, do you keep your original cap badge, or do you go to the cap badge of the infantry unit that you're serving with?
So medics will always keep their medic cap badge, but we change beret.
Oh, okay.
So I've got the green beret now, but we have the like cherry backing patch on our berets. So whoever we're attached to will always keep our medical cap badge, and we just change beret.
Ah, same, makes sense.
Going over to the reserves.
Every day is a school day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, cool. So obviously a big part of your life to this point now has been the army and sort of medic based things, you know, whether that's paramedic or and things like that. So let's rewind it all the way back to growing up in the Southend area and that sort of thing. How were you at school? What was your growing up in school life like? Were you sporty? Were you always sort of academic? What was the what was the Kelly back in the day?
I'd say I was a bit of an average Joe, but an all-rounder. So I liked sports, but I was never very good at any of them. But, you know, taking part that counts.
Apparently.
Yeah. Academically, I did okay. I got B's and C's in my GCSEs. But I did want to be a nurse. That was my actual goal at that point. I wanted to join the RAF as a nurse. They had a scheme where you could join after your A-levels and they put you through uni, similar to what they do in the army for nurses.
Is that why you joined the Air Cadets as a precursor for that? Or were you in the Air Cadets, then found the idea of going to the RAF nursing?
I was in Air Cadets first. I joined Air Cadets purely because I didn't really have any after school clubs or, you know, extracurricular activities. So I just wanted to do something a bit different, which is why I did that. And that's where I learned about the role for RAF nursing.
Okay.
But the A levels at my school got a little bit messed up, and the science A level I was doing got dropped. And to become an RAF nurse, you need to have a science A level. So I dropped out of sixth form and I got a job in a factory. And I stayed there for a few years just deciding what I wanted to do. But it was the first aid that we did at Air Cadets, you know, the St. John's stuff that we did, that kind of, yeah, led me in the direction of healthcare, because I'd not done anything like that before.
So when you were growing up, sort of when you were a child and moving into secondary school, before you started that journey and realised that you wanted to go into nursing and medic stuff, was nursing always something you wanted to do, or did you not really thought about a career at that point, or did you aspire to be something else?
I think I'd always wanted to do something like nursing, or something where I was working with people and helping people. I sort of toyed around the idea of teaching, but it was, yeah, always sort of nursing, healthcare. It wasn't until the Air Cadets that I decided a military pathway would be, like, well suited to me.
Oh, I see. And you say sort of the science A level was the thing that sort of shut the RAF route down. Was that something that happened with the school, or was that you just not being very good academically, or what is, or you just messed it up? They messed it up. What was the crack with that?
No, it was a school. So actually, I was on a camp with Air Cadets when GCSE results came out. I was at RAF Lucas, and my mum picked up my A level results. And it was at that time that they should have advised me that that A level was dropped. But I didn't find out until my first day of sixth form, at which point I just picked up history instead because I didn't know what to do. So I stayed there for probably 8 weeks, sort of, you know, playing my mind, wondering what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. At which point I did, I don't know if you ever knew this, but I did actually apply to join the Navy.
No, I didn't.
No. So I went to Chelmsford. I had my interview, which went well, but then I failed on the aptitude test because there was a mechanics part.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't get enough marks. But the guy there, he said I did really well, but because I wasn't in education, it was a year wait. So they basically said, you know, come back in a year if you're still interested. And so in a year's time for me, I didn't want to do that anymore at that point. And that was for a medic role.
Oh, there we Navy. Go. A medic role,
yeah,
in the Navy.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. So you essentially, not belating the army, but your first choice was the RAF. The A level situation messed that up, so your next level was, right, I'll try the Navy as a medic. That didn't work out, so then you're working in a factory, and then the fourth choice was the army, was it?
Well, my outlook,
kind of put you in a position here, didn't I?
You did, yeah. No, it, for me, like, I was never that worried about which service I was in. I mean, my nan and granddad and uncle were all RAF. My family doesn't have a very big army history. I think one of my nan's brother was in the army, but the RAF was kind of the obvious choice because of that and because of cadets. But the way the RAF recruit is that they'll only recruit when there's a need for that role. So when it came to a few years later, when I did apply for the army, I didn't want to go Navy at that point. I felt I'd get seasick and I just didn't fancy it.
So the did RAF... I, but I'm a glutton for punishment, so
yeah. The RAF weren't recruiting for the medic role, so that wasn't an option. And I figured, army, the tests are not the same level that they are for RAF and Navy.
Oh, that's a very, still, very nice way of putting that. Sorry. Not the same level, were they not?
Not good. The same good. Level. I mean, I'm being harsh against myself here at the same time.
I know, that's why I like it.
Yeah, no, I thought if I stand a chance, like, I reckon... But it was still for medics, like the barb test, that I don't think it's barb test anymore, but it was a barb test. The level that I had to reach was, you
was
know,
still
it was
that one
quite,
for the medic.
Yeah, it was quite higher.
Yeah. Okay, so you were at the factory, sort of doing the day-to-day thing, trying to decide, when did you fix on the point that, yeah, the army was the route? How old were you then?
I think I was 19.
So that's still quite young to make that decision, especially as a female going into the army. Did you ever feel that was a bit of a daunting task?
Yeah, I think I had to have a lot of sort of self-belief. I don't think many people really believed I would go ahead with it, even, you know, through passing interview, passing selection. I think my family always thought I would go to basic training and not like it and then come home. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of it was sort of, I knew that I had to do it for me. Like, I wanted to achieve that. So, yeah, I don't know. Even though I was 19, I was 20 when I started basic training. And I'd obviously toyed around the idea for quite a few years at this point. So, yeah.
So how did you find... So, obviously, most of the people that I've had on the podcast, whether it be Army or Marines, have all gone the infantry route. You know, people that I've chatted to from the paras, Army, Infantry, the Marines, and that's all the infantry route. And pretty much that is all based around just being fit. Everything else they sort of teach you when you get there. Is that the same when you're going into, obviously, phase one is infantry skills anyway, isn't it? Is that all sort of fitness based when you're applying?
Are you just talking now about basic training or selection as well?
Yeah, sort of your route into the army. Is it the same as infantry, or is it different because you're going for a specific role?
So I do think on my selection there was guys going for para. So I think it's just the times that you have to get, obviously, are much faster if you're going for para. I think they had to do it in 10:30 or something like that for selection. And I had to do it in 14 minutes or something like that.
So it's all the same test, just different levels.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the same now, because I know a lot of it's recently changed with fitness in the army. But yeah, we did that part the same. I don't know if the para guys then have to go and do something else. I'm not sure. But for me, it was a 2-day selection with some fitness tests, some sort of team building tasks, an interview and the barb test. And that was that.
Did you feel like you struggled at any point on those sort of the application? Was there a point where you were like, actually, this thing was more difficult than I expected? Or was it all pretty in the stride, Kelly's going to smash this?
I found it went okay. I think I was quite lucky. I know some people have issues. Like, it can take a very long time to get the whole application through with medical things coming back and forth. No, I actually found it okay. I felt like I did well. I think the air cadet stuff really helped with, like, the team building tasks. I had quite a lot of confidence by that point, which I didn't have before cadets. So to go and do selection, yeah, I felt confident. At selection, I felt I did all right. I think I got a B or whatever, B+, which is decent. So, yeah, it all went quite well. And at that point, I was kind of like, well, this... I don't know. I don't believe in fate as such, but I was like, this is going really well. Like, this feels like the right path for me to be on.
And that sort of is the main thing, isn't it? You know, people can say whatever they want to say and advise you however you want to advise. But if you're feeling like this is the right route, then it probably was.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Awesome. So, I mean, the first sort of three questions that I had, you pretty much have answered so far. It was, you know, did you always want to join the army? No, you wanted to join all three. How did you choose Army as the branch? You didn't really. You chose all three, and Army is the one that felt the right choice in the end. And then the other one was, did cadets help you with selection? And yes, it did. So brilliant. Cheers for ruining my podcast, Kel. So
it's all right.
when you are at phase one, do you do that as a mixed bag? Is that males, females? Is that just females, just males? How does that work? Obviously, coming from my background, it was only blokes were allowed at that time. So it's quite interesting for me. I would like to know a little bit more. I think my experience of females in the military is based around a few Wrens and Navy girls and what I've seen on Our Girl on BBC. So hit me with it. Yeah. How did it work?
So when I joined in 2015, we were a full female troop. There's four sections with 12 girls in each section. And we weren't allowed to talk to the boys. I think we were on the top floor of the block. There were boys on the three floors below, but even if we sort of said hello in the corridor, we got shouted at and, you know, have to do press-ups and whatever. But last year it changed that there are now no single-sex female troops. They're all mixed troops or single male troops, because recruitment obviously still recruits more males than females. So
yeah.
For me, it was full female, which I thought was great. But now, due to sort of recruitment numbers and whatever, to keep recruitment moving, it is mixed troops.
So what about the training team, the directing staff, the DS? Are they mixed? Are they all male, all female? How does that work?
No, we had a male troop commander, female troop sergeant, and then one female section commander and three male section commanders.
Ah, so it's all sort of mix and match. And I don't suppose you know... Yeah. On the, I'm guessing, because the rest of the army is the same in terms of there's males and females at both rank level. Is that the same for the all-male troops as well? There's just a mixture?
Yeah, it will literally just be whoever gets assigned to that PID. It doesn't really matter. They like to get different sort of cap badges, and at Purbright, yeah. And I'm assuming at Winchester as well, each squadron is under sort of a different cap badge. So... You might, like, mine was an RLC squadron, so we had quite a few RLC cap badges, but then we also had some engineers and medics and whatever sort of roaming around as well.
Yeah, I think from speaking to other people, they like to keep the mixed cap badge, because obviously every regiment or cap badge or unit, whatever you want to say, they all carry slightly different ethoses, underarched, obviously, under the army ethos, and the different ways and the different experiences that those individuals have mixed in together is always beneficial, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It would have been not that useful, actually, if everyone was in RLC, because I mean, a lot of us were joined as medics, nurses, etc. So it's good to get a mixed bag and, you know, mixed experience. Some of our troop staff had been in for sort of, you know, 10 years, some only 5 years. So yeah, just to get different points of view and different experiences and stuff is really good.
So when you obviously you yourself, you wanted to be in nursing medic role. When you sort of went to apply, that's what you applied for.
Yeah.
When you were chatting to other people and especially other girls, did most females that go into the army, do they choose to go that route? Because if you look from the outside in, it seems like a large proportion of females are in the medic or nursing role. There's not a great deal in the other roles. Is that something that's intentional or just by choice, or do you not really know?
No, it is all choice. So you pick three options before you go to selection. So my first choice was combat med tech. I think my next choice was air dispatcher. And my last choice was ground crew for Army Air Corps. But I would have only ever gone in as a medic. Those were just filling in gaps. But in my troop, there was actually quite a few different cap badges. There was artillery girls, Royal Logistics Corps, Intelligence Corps. And yeah, there was quite a few nurses and medics, but it was mixed. But it is all just choice, preference. You might be asked at selection if you have got more qualifications than the role you're applying for require. They may say, you know, why don't you apply for this role instead?
And steer you into something else.
Yeah, maybe steer into medical nursing. And depending on recruitment, if they're looking for more people to go into a certain role. Say, for example, dog handler is always very oversubscribed.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be waiting quite a long time to get onto that role. So
oh, that
you
makes
may be
sense.
Sort of, yeah, asked if you'd rather do something else and maybe transfer in the future.
Which is always a complete lie.
Yeah.
I've literally got countless mates that were like, oh yeah, if you join this branch and then, you know, you'll only have to do 18 months and then well, you're guaranteed to get on this course. 2 years passes true. And they put their chit in and leave. Yeah. Anyway, so cool. So after basic, you went off to where to do your phase two training. How does that work? And obviously, this is all really new to me. In the Marines, it's all done in one place, in one lot. So, you know, go into as much detail as you think I'll understand with my crayon eating mind.
Okay, I'll speak really slowly for you.
Thank you.
So I went to the Defence College of Healthcare Education and Training, which is in Lichfield, not too far from Birmingham. So when I went there, I was expecting to do a 23-week course, which is called Common Core. But they just changed the course about 6 months before I got there to a 58-week course called Defence Medic. So when I arrived, I was actually putting holding troop for 7 months. I repeat, 7 months. We were doing random tasks. We dug a bike path in a local park. We helped out at a local farm. It was kind of one of those. I don't think they really knew what to do with us at that point.
Wow. So you're meant to go, meant to start one course. Then
yeah.
The system had changed, so you were meant to start a different course.
Yeah.
And because the army is the army and it's part of the MOD, that was fully up their own arses. And you ended up waiting for 7 months.
Yes.
Wow.
It was basically, the course had gone from, I think you got maybe a level 2 or level 3 qualification at Common Core. And on the Defence Medic, it was level 4. So a lot of people were not academically sort of ready and were failing the course. So they were getting put on to resit the course before we were allowed to initially start.
Right.
So there was a massive backlog of people. So we were kind of just milling around. We were working, kind of, but it was more like doing voluntary work. There's a museum at Lichfield, so some people helped out with some of the exhibitions there and stuff, but it was just a bit of a waiting game, really.
So
they did fly by.
Was that your whole, how many people were on the course that were sort of waiting to start, or was there drips and drabs starting here and there?
So we were waiting to get on to us. I can't even remember. There's quite a few people waiting, probably a couple of hundred people waiting. And then there was 60 something of us who were going into the next course. So then there would be another lot, but it kind of just kept flowing. So people would come from basic training and then people would go onto the course. And then, you know, it's a continual flow, but it kind of, it just took a long time for it to actually happen.
Yeah, it was sort of one of those waiting games that felt like it wasn't ever going to end.
Yeah. And the annoying thing was we weren't allowed to be given any pre-learning, which didn't really make any sense because, you know, a lot of us hadn't got a medical background, but for some reason we weren't. I mean, we could do our own self-study, but we didn't really know what we were going into. So we weren't doing anything medical. We were just doing random stuff.
I think that's always difficult. Like when you're sort of, you want to do your own reading and you want to sort of see what's going on. But as you say, if you don't know your actual, the subject matter, because yes, you were going into medic stuff. It's like, well, that's a huge amount. Like, what, you can't just Google medic and start reading stuff and it'd be like, yeah, that's pre-learning done.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be that helpful.
So after your 7 months, did you finally start in a troop?
I did. Defence Medic 5.
Woohoo!
There was actually only 10 courses run in the end because of the issues they had. They ran it for 10 courses. We were the fifth course. And then they actually put it back to the 23-week course that it was originally. But that's another story.
So on that course, is that mixed?
That was mixed. And it was also tri-service. So there were two Marine lads on my course, a few Navy lads, a few RAF. I say lads and lasses. Mm-hmm. It was really good. I liked that aspect of it.
Was that your first? So I guess that would have been your first experience with working with other services.
Yeah, definitely. It was good. The Marines we had obviously been in the job for a few years, because I believe it's something you do sort of later. You don't join as a Marine medic, you join as a Marine and then you become a medic later on if that's the route you want to take.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Whereas most of us Army, Navy, RAF had come straight from basic training. There was a couple who had retraded. Retraded, is that a word? But yeah,
I think so. We know what you mean.
Yeah, but no, it was good. I really loved phase two. Like, I love phase one, to be honest, and phase two.
Well, yeah, you had a 7-month holiday. What's there not to like?
The actual training was, I really enjoyed it. It was good. It was the first time in my life that I've studied something that I actually really enjoyed studying. So.
And how long was that course, did you say?
I think it's 58 weeks, but that's including leave, you know, sort of
yeah.
a few weeks in between.
So while you're doing that course, is that all based, where did you say, Lichfield, were you?
Lichfield, yeah. So we were at Lichfield, I think for 8 weeks we were there doing our EMT course, which is emergency medical technician. That probably doesn't mean anything to you, but it's just, it's sort of, it's not yet paramedic, it's a level below paramedic.
Yeah.
So we completed that course, and then I went to London to work with London Ambulance Service for 10 weeks. And I worked with a unit there who sort of specialise in kind of close to military medic stuff. They're trained in sort of counterterrorism and stuff like that. Not like in the medical side of things. So
yeah,
they have a bit of extra training and they do training exercises and stuff like that with the police and things. So that was really good to work with them guys. And that's when I realised, like, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to be a paramedic.
Ah, right. So that's when you sort of realised, actually, the paramedic and the civvy route would probably suit you better.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realise until then that there was sort of this combination role of doing that, you know, still doing a kind of military side, dealing with, you know, gunshot wounds and things like that that are happening all the time in London. Like, I figured that was probably going to be the more likely role for me to go down to actually deal with combat injuries, because obviously I didn't deploy anywhere during my army career. So I figured I'd like to use the skills and training that I've learned, like, for real, on real people, rather than just on exercises, which is mostly what I did during my army time.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. You know, I've talked about it a lot, and you don't necessarily, if you're an infantryman, you don't necessarily go and join the forces to hurt people and to kill people, but you do join to be the best soldier you can be and to be tested at that level. And it must be the same for you. You know, you join to learn as much about medic stuff, if you like, you know, saving people's lives in those situations. And if you don't ever get put in that situation to get yourself tested and to use those skills, then you go looking for it yourself.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, at that point on that placement, I didn't know what the future held. I was still at phase two, so I didn't know whether I would deploy. But I knew that my future goal would be to go down the paramedic pathway. I didn't realise how soon I would do it, but I knew that was what I wanted to do.
And that's, it made sense. That's when it sort of, yeah, fitted in. So yeah. When you finish your course and you become, you know, the qualified medic that you are, where did you get posted from then?
So I went from Lichfield to 3-3 Field Hospital, which is in Gosport. It's actually disbanded now.
So, what did you do to it?
It was already being disbanded.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. I don't know why. It was to be fair, the camp was not great. I don't know if you've ever been to Fort Blockhouse.
No.
But yeah, it's a bit of a ghost town. It must have been really good back in the day. There used to be a hospital there, Royal Hospital Hasler. But when I got there, my unit deployed straight away without me. So I was on rear party. It's like my career is just rear party or a waiting game. But
so you were good at it by then.
Yeah, I was a top class waiter. But I got to go on some courses. Whilst I was there, I went to California and did an exercise over there at Camp Pendleton with the US Navy. I got to do my battles course, which is the Battlefield Advanced Trauma Life Support course.
Is that the one where they have all of the actors and real amputees with blood and stuff everywhere?
Yeah, it was good. We also have like pig throat and sheep ribs to practice some of the skills on.
We're not talking about dinner now.
Yeah, no, we were able to prod and poke these different carcasses to practice sort of the interventions that we'd be doing on real people.
Oh, that's quite good then. A little bit more realistic training.
Yeah, it was all right, actually. What else did I do? I got a fork truck license whilst I was there.
There you go. If in
that's
doubt.
That's what you join for. Medic on a fork truck. Never know when you're going to need it.
You always need them.
Yeah, so I was there actually only for a year. To be honest, I didn't really enjoy that posting. It was, I don't know, I was at a point where I didn't want to be in at that point. I was sort of demotivated. I wasn't enjoying the job. I was doing nothing medical. I was still able to go out and do shifts in London like every now and then. And I mean, like, you know, a shift every couple of months on a weekend, which is in my own time. So I think I was just, I was getting pretty fed up. So I spoke to my RCMO and he found there was a PID opening at Purbright.
All right.
And I was like, anything, I'll go anywhere. I just can't
something
be
different.
Here. Yeah, it just got really, really draining. And I never expected that to happen so early in my career. So I was so lucky when, you know, luckily I'd been quite chatty with him and looking at my options anyway, that when that role came up, he said it's a clinical role. You know, I got local Lance Corporal at that point. I moved to Purbright.
And what was your role at Purbright? What were you doing there? So you say it was a clinical role, which was obviously what you wanted to do more than what you were doing. But what were you doing day to day? And you know, what was your job?
We work in the medical centre, but we are all attached to a squadron. A training squadron. Mostly we're working in the medical centre. So when sick parade happens every morning, between us, we'll get through those patients, treat as we can or refer if we need to. We taught some lessons to the recruits, so sexual health, smoking or substance misuse,
on cold injuries. Smoking after sexual health?
Yes.
Like having a cigarette after sex?
It wasn't exactly after. They're on different days. You have to wait a few days after sex for a cigarette.
Let it sink in. I bet there was some quite awkward lessons then, really, like trying to give sexual health to a bunch of recruits that are like training.
It does take a bit of confidence, because obviously sometimes there'd be sort of three troops in lecture theatre, so you may have nearly 200 recruits, and it could be three all male troops, and then there's just me showing them pictures of not very nice willies. But it works. It's a good scare tactic, and you know, hopefully it will teach them to use protection and all that.
Doing the good work.
And then it didn't happen very often because we were very understaffed at that medical center when I was there, but we would go out on the last day of final fling, which is the last exercise of basic training, and we'd sort of assess the treatment. There'd be sort of a casualty right at the end that they'd have to treat with like tourniquets and whatever, and then extract the casualty on the final stretch run. So we'd go and assist with that too, and we'd do med cover for the pass out parade. So it was a good mixed bag, actually.
And did you enjoy that one more than Gosport?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah,
it was definitely a much better environment. I mean, it's weird because you get a rank, but you're still at the bottom of the pile because you have to be a Lance Corporal to work at Purbright as permanent staff anyway.
Mm.
But I don't know, we just got given a bit of responsibility, and I was able to use some of the skills that I'd learned that I just sort of had to leave behind for a year. And I don't know, there was that purpose had sort of come back when I went there.
Oh, that's good. And were you at Purbright when you decided on leaving?
I was. So I got to Purbright and I waited 6 months to just, you know, see how things went. I could have signed off from the moment that I got to Purbright, but I thought I need to give it a chance. I won't just go with, you know, my last experience. This is a new beginning. I'll see how it goes. So I waited 6 months, at which point I thought, you know, I am enjoying this, but in a way, this is actually pushing me more now. Like, this is definitely what I want to do in the clinical side of things, but I want to go out and do it for emergencies now, like not in primary care.
Mm-hmm.
So I signed off, and obviously it's a year to wait. So I pretty much worked there until the week before I left the army, just getting as much experience as I could. And yeah, I did really enjoy it, but it was hard work. Like, it was much harder work than what I was doing at Gosport. But I didn't join the army to not do hard work. Do you know what I mean? My first unit was just dull. It was like sitting around, getting shouted at for sitting around, and then asking what they want you to do and being told nothing.
sit around.
Yeah. You're not sitting around well enough. That's what it was like.
So when you decided you were leaving, did you do your full 12 months? Did you look into the reserves then? Was there a plan to go straight into the reserves? What was the... You knew you were going to uni at that point, didn't you?
No.
All right, good.
That was another thing. It was a bit of a risk. I signed off in the September, and I didn't actually apply for unis until the October.
Right.
In the hope that I'd get into one of them. It was kind of the way it works with obviously starting uni in September the following year. I didn't want to sign off too late, and I didn't want to wait a whole year extra. So, yeah, I just signed off and thought, right, let's just really hope this works out. Worst case scenario, I could have signed back on. That is worst case scenario. Or I would have found a different role. But, yeah, you kind of get asked when you sign off to consider the reserves. So you're meant to do a reserves visit. So I visited an intelligence corps unit in Southampton. They didn't really have a need for a medic. They kind of said they'd take me on, but they would have liked me to sort of recap badge, which wasn't... I mean, I'm sure it's an interesting role, but I don't really have the time or interest in going through phase two training again. And then I went to the rifles unit that I'm at, and they had a much bigger need. They always have medics with them anyway. They didn't have a medic at that time. So, yeah, they were happy to take me on. You just need a recommendation from your CO. So, Perbright, my CO.
The trifles always want people.
What?
The trifles. Make sure you call them that. They really like
the trifles. Okay. I don't think they're going to like it. Are you trying to get me beat up?
There's only one way to find out.
All right. I can't say that now. I'm technically... I don't mean I'm a trifle.
Well, you're attached to the trifle, so yeah, best part of.
All right. I do like a trifle. So
yeah, I mean...
not the worst, though.
Yeah, if you look at the fact that you're going to eat it, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so you were sort of in that position now where you were coming to... You were doing your transitioning out. You'd apply to unis. Did you apply straight away to go on the paramedic course? What is the paramedic course at uni? What's it called? And you know, how do you get on it, really?
So there's UCAS. You have to go through UCAS to apply for an undergraduate degree. So I went on UCAS. Basically, before like all of this happened, I'd been emailing, and I swear to you, every single uni in the UK that does a paramedic course, because I didn't want to apply to unis that wouldn't take the qualifications I had.
And that's the army qualifications.
Yeah, they are civilian qualifications. Like, I was very lucky to get qualified in civilian qualifications from the army. But some unis require really high qualifications, some require sort of mediocre. So I thought, I'm just going to email them all. I sent them scanned copies of my certificates. I gave them a quick brief rundown of my career, and some said, you know, we'd consider your application, some said no we wouldn't, and some said, you know, definitely apply, you would have a strong application. So from that I picked five unis in five locations, really is all I was going with, five locations that I thought I could tolerate for 3 years. And yeah, I went from there. I had interviews. I didn't get into one. I got into the other three, and I withdrew from the other one, and I ended up picking Bournemouth. and it's a 3-year course. It's a Bachelor of Science degree. And it's pretty much 50-50 placement, 50 placement, 50% uni time. So it's quite a good course. You get lots of clinical exposure. And yeah, I like it in Bournemouth. I'd never really been here before, so.
Yeah, that's quite a good balance, really, isn't it? Especially from someone like yourself who joined the army to go out and do the job. It's better that the course is a lot of clinical actually on placement doing the job rather than all in a classroom. Otherwise, you know, it's just going to be harder for you to quiz it out.
Yeah, definitely. Like I was saying to you earlier, I'm on placement at the moment. It's a 6-week placement and I'm just following a rota of, you know, my mentor, paramedic. So, yeah, it's pretty much you just get thrown into the job. Obviously, they're very understanding that it's, you know, first year, they'll only push you to where you're comfortable. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And the experience that I've got is really helping me, especially with like just the basics, like communication and talking to people. I'm having a really good time and I'm looking forward to the rest of it. It's just going so fast. I can't believe I've already been here for 6 months.
That's crazy.
Nearly 7 months. Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. So what's the how does it work long-term goal-wise? So we're catching up now and we're looking into the future, so you know we're getting towards the end of our chat. But you finish your degree in two more years time, and then do you have to apply to separate ambulance services? Do you apply to the overall ambulance service? How does it work in terms of getting a job in the area that you want?
So there's different trusts in like different geographical locations. So like I said, I'm with South West. There's a South Central, South East, East of England, blah blah blah. So after working with South West, I should be offered a job with them straight after uni. The class is a sort of a 3-year interview.
Right.
But if you don't want to work with South West, which is obviously absolutely fine, you don't have to, then you apply for whichever trust you want to work for. So my current goal is to apply for London. I want to go to London and work there for a few years. You have to do 2 years as a newly qualified paramedic, which basically means you're kind of still being watched, which sounds a bit sad after 3 years of study. But it's just to protect you and to protect the patients. You sometimes have to validate your reasons why you might leave a patient at home, and you speak to a more experienced paramedic, chat through it with them, and as long as they're happy with your decision making, then yeah, that's all good. And there's something in London called the cycle response unit.
Cycle?
Where you, yeah.
On a bike.
On a push bike, yeah.
Right.
But I actually really fancy that role. So that would kind of be my next step. You're a solo responder then, so you're kind of, you know, it's kind of a next level, as I feel anyway, to sort of go from working as part of a crew on an ambulance, so there's two of you, to then being on your own on a push bike.
That's that extra responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, not only to not bash into people when you're pedalling really fast.
With your panniers on the back.
Yeah, but to get there quickly, you know, and start that treatment. People will back you up, you know, it won't just be you for hours, hopefully.
Well, you'll probably be there first on a bike in London. Like, central London's a nightmare to get around. So on a bike, you probably will be there first, and then the cars and the ambulances will be there afterwards.
Yeah, the purpose, I think, of the bikes is to get there first, to sort of the high priority jobs and start, you know, if you've got, we'll have a defibrillator and oxygen, things like that. So start with that very basic life support and get the ball rolling so that when more people turn up, you've already set the scene for them. So
The actual sort of on-scene life-saving stuff, and then as soon as more equipment turns up, you can do some more of the life sort of care stuff and the preventing it getting worse sort of thing. That's interesting. So you've got quite a good view of what's coming up and sort of the focus, but you've got 2 years to enjoy placement and enjoy uni life as it is. How do you think, obviously, because you're a little bit, you're not quite a mature student, but you're not the normal uni age either. How is that sort of settling into uni? Is it not really noticeable? Is it because it's a maturer course anyway that doesn't really matter? Or have you found that?
you're right in what you're saying. Like, the course is probably 50-50. There's a few guys and girls who are 18, sort of straight from school, but there is quite a lot of people around my age, and a few people sort of 30s and 40s. So as far as the actual course goes, it doesn't really, I don't know, we all sort of just blend in together. It's really nice to have a mixture of ages and experience. As far as like the uni experience, like, I'm not out partying all the time, but that isn't just because I'm 25. Like, it's just this course is so full on and heavy with placement. Like, there's just not a lot of time. Even like our holidays, we only get sort of 6 weeks off in the summer. We don't get the sort of 3 months that other courses get. So, but yeah, I am technically now a mature student. They say at 25, that's when you get that title. So I'm officially mature. Yeah. But yeah, I'm really glad I've come now. If I came at 18, especially on this course, I'm not sure I would have stuck it out. But with the experience I've got, yeah, it's definitely the right time.
And you've done other things now in your life that now you've realised that, yes, this might be hard work or frustrating and annoying and stressful at times. You know that because you've done lots of other stuff, this is the end goal. So you're working towards that end goal. Whereas I think if you've just come out of sixth form or just come out of a different undergrad scheme and you're going into this straight away and you're like, this is really tough. Do I really want to do it? And at least you've got that understanding now that, yeah, it is.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I know it's what I want to do. I've got lots of experience and exposure to the work. You know, I know what to expect. I know it isn't all fun and games and it isn't all emergency life-saving. Like, a lot of it's social care and just, you know, dealing with primary care a lot of the time now. But I'm aware of that and I'm happy with that. You know, I just want to help where I can. And, yeah, hopefully have a good career out of it.
Awesome. And is that your plan to have a long career, go sort of full period and have a pension, move up this responsibility and rank structure and sort of carry it through? Or is it just sort of take it as it comes at this stage?
I would like to do a master's degree in something paramedic science, trauma science based. And then maybe move up to the next sort of pay band of responsibility. But I think long term, this is going to sound really silly now to chuck this in the end, but I think I'd like to be a teacher when I'm older, and use all these experiences from military and paramedic role. And just, I'm not saying being a teacher is easy in any way, but the physical side of the job that I'm in, I think in a realistic sort of light, I don't know how many years I'll be able to do it for. Hopefully, you know, I'll get to my 40s, maybe even 50s. But then, yeah, maybe I'd like to do sort of primary school teaching or something.
Oh, awesome. But, awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's get on to, I like to finish sort of, especially when I'm chatting to someone like yourself, with a couple of sort of tips, really. And I think you've got unique experience of going into the army and then transitioning into the paramedic sort of scene, if you like. So if you were to do it again and you knew that you wanted to be a paramedic, would you suggest to people that the army is a good route to go and get some experience and some medic sort of background before? Or would you suggest that if you want to be a paramedic, go to A levels and then go straight to uni?
So I would always recommend military experience. I can't knock it. I know I have knocked it throughout this conversation, but overall, I think it really helped me develop as a person. So 100%, I'd say if it's something that you're interested in and, you know, you think it's something you'd like to do, it's that 4 years minimum. 4 years isn't a massive chunk of time, but it will literally change you as a person and give you some great skills. So, yeah, I think it would be a great stepping stone. And especially to come into this role, I think any life experience will help you out. So, yeah, I would recommend going through a military pathway for a few years and getting those skills and then applying for university.
Awesome. And last one, if you could speak to like 14, 15 year old Kelly right now, who's still sort of at school, about to get a GCSEs, hitting that annoying period with the A levels and stuff like that. What one piece of advice would you give her?
I'd probably have told myself to try and stay in education. I know it would have changed my pathway a little bit, but it would have been good if I did get my A levels at that time. So yeah, stay in school when you can.
Stay in school, kids.
Stay in school. Get those qualifications and then decide. You've got more options then.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on, Kel. If I don't know, I know you've got social media and stuff like that, but if in the unlikely event people listen, and then in the even more unlikely event they want to ask you more questions, where can people get hold of you?
Well, I've got an Instagram account.
That's usually what people give out, yeah.
What am I called? That's the question, though.
You're just going to Google it
now. No, I'm trying to go on my Instagram. I am Kelly Bateman12.
There you go. So Kelly Bateman12 on Instagram. And people can sort of have a look at what you're up to. And I know you do put pretty much it's just mirror selfies of whatever uniform you're wearing that day.
If that's not a reason to follow, then I don't know what is.
Awesome, Kel. Well, thank you very much for coming on The Working Title. You've been a great guest, and it's brilliant to have a different perspective.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Working Title, a podcast hosted by PJ Harries. Remember, do something that makes you just a little bit better every single day.